The Pain Pod is produced by Bloodstream Media and made possible thanks to our sponsor, Tremoh Pharmaceuticals. Visit resethastudy.com to learn more about their work.
Shh, don't talk about it. Don't talk about it. Don't talk about it. It's fine. It's nothing. But what if it's something? That only happens to women. It's embarrassing. I can't. I don't want to talk about it.
But guess what? We're gonna talk about it.
Nobody wakes up with these symptoms and thinks, oh, I need to go find a pelvic floor physical therapist.
Today's episode is dedicated to pelvic pain. Hi, I'm Mel Forrest, and you're listening to The Pain Pod. What do we mean when we say pelvic pain? Are we just talking about pain or discomfort in the lowest part of the abdomen? Or is there more? I'm sure some of you are here thinking, you know what? This episode doesn't concern me. I don't suffer from pelvic pain, and I don't foresee it being an issue for someone like me. When I first went on this journey, I held a common misconception that pelvic pain was mainly associated with menstrual cramps and ovulation, basically periods and pregnancy. But wow, was I wrong? It's no secret that there's a stigma surrounding pelvic pain. Many people feel embarrassed bringing it up to their healthcare providers due to social norms surrounding our bodies and sexuality. But what exactly is pelvic pain? Well, I guess first, we need to talk about the pelvis.
Shh, don't talk about it.
You know, the area of the body that's located between the abdomen and the legs.
Shh, what are you doing?
That provides support for the intestines and contains the bladder, rectum, reproductive organs, and many pelvic floor muscles and fascia.
Who's fascia?
Oh, you know, that thin casing of connective tissue that surrounds and holds every organ, blood vessel, bone, and nerve fiber, and muscle in place. Yeah, that one. We're talking about it. It's easy to ignore the pelvis when it's working fine. But what happens when it isn't? Why do we feel so uncomfortable talking about a part of our body that serves a significant and essential purpose? In this episode, we talk with two pelvic floor physical therapists and discuss the stigma surrounding pelvic pain and when a person should seek help. As we continue our journey moving forward, I understand that talking about things like pelvic pain can be difficult. But remember, the only thing that should be uncomfortable is pain.
So pelvic physical therapy is just like any other physical therapy. We go in and assess the muscles, length, strength, endurance, coordination, all the usual things, but we just take the pelvic floor into consideration. My name is Rachel Dayoff, and I'm a pelvic floor physical therapist.
Rachel Dayoff is a pelvic floor physical therapist and founder of the Pelvic Model Physical Therapy in Los Angeles. Many of you may be asking, what is pelvic floor physical therapy? And how come I'm just hearing about it now? Or maybe you've heard about it, but you don't know what they do or when pelvic floor physical therapy became a thing.
The thing that I see a lot is that a lot of people think that they can Kegel themselves out of a pelvic problem.
Kegel. Remember that word? It feels so 1990s. Well, it's actually a person named Dr. Arnold Kegel, who in the 1940s published several papers on exercise regimens for women who experienced leaks and other pelvic floor dysfunction. Kegel is probably the most common referenced word, usually in pop culture, regarding pelvic floor dysfunction. But there's so much more. Rachel talks about some of the stigmas and misconceptions surrounding pelvic health.
any gender can have pelvic pain. I really do see a huge mix, 50-50, of both males and females. So in the same vein where females can have pain in their vulvar region or like deeper pain with penetration, with intercourse, men too have the same pelvic floor muscles as women. So let's just say a man has a tight pelvic floor, like his pelvic floor is too contracted. If you're asking a man to ejaculate, that's another really big contraction of the pelvic floor. And if it's already in a spasm, then that can cause some pelvic pain for a man. And this is way more common than a lot of people think. And it just starting the conversation with this can really help destigmatize people who have pelvic pain because it is hard to talk about.
So if any gender can experience pelvic pain and dysfunction, why was it so broadly marketed as a problem that mainly affects women? To expand on Rachel's thoughts, Stephanie Prendergast, a seasoned pelvic floor physical therapist, talks about how stigmas surrounding sex contribute to common misconceptions surrounding pelvic pain.
My name is Stephanie Prendergast, and I'm co-founder and CEO of the Pelvic Health and Rehabilitation Center. So I've been practicing for 22 years, so we see things so much better than they were, but also so far to go. There is a stigma around it because most people think they have an STI or a sexually transmitted disease, which is associated with shame when the cultures are coming back negative, and that's often not the case. Or they think their partner may be cheating on them, and that's why they have these symptoms, which is also really alarming for people because it's obviously a disturbing topic. Some people feel very comfortable talking about it, other people do not, and that is patients and providers. So people think gynecologists and urologists are comfortable talking about sex and symptoms around sex. This is actually not true. And studies have shown that the majority of gynecologists and urologists are actually uncomfortable talking about sex. They don't want to bring these things up with their own patients. So if the providers are uncomfortable and the patients are concerned, you see how this gets so confusing for people and frustrating until they get into the hands of people who actually understand these issues inside and out, including all the politics around it. So we try to match where somebody's comfort is. And if they're a little nervous to talk to us, we hope we can bring that barrier down.
These common misconceptions and stigmas surrounding gender and sex leave many people nervous or uneasy talking with their providers about pelvic pain. Pelvic floor physical therapists strive to break down this barrier. And one way is by educating people on what constitutes pelvic pain. Stephanie and Rachel share some common symptoms a person might experience regarding chronic pelvic pain.
Most people do not know this is a muscle issue because the symptoms mirror a prostate infection, a bladder infection, a yeast infection. It looks like anything else. Nobody wakes up with these symptoms and thinks, oh, I need to go find a pelvic floor physical therapist. Most people don't even know what we are until they either find us on their own from Google searches because their doctors weren't even sure what's going on with them, or they could be referred by a specialist who actually did properly diagnose them. But it's kind of the situation where nobody with these symptoms is praying for an infection, but when you start to get no answers and the cultures come back negative, people don't know what to do.
A lot of the time, people do get screened first for infections. So let's just say someone starts off with having increased urination or it feels like they need to pee all the time. So of course, they'll go to the urologist, get UTI tests, STD tests, and for men, they'll get something for their prostate to see if that is contributing to their problems. Let's just say that's all ruled out. Then it becomes like, what else is there? The pelvic floor can relate to all of those things. It can relate to the increased frequency of urination, increased urge of urination, and mainly because it does surround the urethra and the bladder, it does share some of the same innervation. So the brain can interpret something that is a bladder problem when it's really a muscle problem.
Because these symptoms mirror that of infections and STDs,
don't talk about it.
People might feel nervous or even embarrassed to seek help for ongoing pain and discomfort.
Oh no, she's still talking about it.
But there's nothing embarrassing about sexual and reproductive health.
Okay, we're talking about it.
and no one should have to endure pain out of fear or embarrassment. So now that you've ruled out an infection, what are some symptoms to be mindful of if you're still experiencing pain?
So the symptoms start in a way that's bothersome, but not alarming in most cases, like just taking into account our patient's history. So they may notice after intercourse, they have to urinate every 15 to 20 minutes. Or if it's a gentleman, like the tip of the penis is sore and more hypersensitive than it should be after an orgasm. Maybe underwear is a little bothersome, but you're like, I'm just going to filter that away. And as that keeps happening over time, it can become more intense. The duration of the pain can last longer. The symptoms can be more severe. And in those cases, again, the normal thing is to think infection, but it might not be. Some quick ways that people can tell, just little tips and tricks for home, is if there is an infection, normally there's not bubbles in your urine. So urine should be clear, it shouldn't have an odor, and there's bubbles when you're not infected. If there is an actual infection, you start to see some of those things. So I think symptoms are the most important. Urinary urgency, frequency, or pain. Sex should not be painful, again, unless you want it to be. People who are having difficulty around orgasm, whether it's pain or achieving orgasm, difficulty with bowel movements, and various body pains. People can have tailbone pain, clitoral pain, underwear intolerance, exercise may bother them. I think the symptoms are most important.
So the pelvic floor muscles sits in the base of your pelvis, and it surrounds a lot of your organs, like your sexual organs, your bowel, your bladder. And because it's so intimately related to those organs, it can influence things that might not seem like a musculoskeletal dysfunction. It might seem like it's in the form of like constipation, or it's hard to have a bowel movement, or it's hard to urinate, or even have intercourse. Like it can influence like penile pain or pain with penetration, vaginal penetration.
Shh, don't talk about it.
We're gonna keep talking about it. We continue our conversation about pelvic pain with pelvic floor physical therapists, Stephanie and Rachel, after this word from our sponsor.
The Pain Pod is produced by Bloodstream Media and made possible thanks to our sponsor, Tremo Pharmaceuticals. Visit resethastudy.com to learn more about their work.
It was very unknown what was happening. This was kind of a new experience for really everyone.
This is Lori Yaterian, Senior Manager of Regulatory Affairs and Operations at Tremo. Lori shares some things that help her get through a day with pain.
The biggest thing is leaning on my family and my friends, like if they're around me, to kind of complain, but also get the support that I need. And then I think another big thing is knowing when to rest.
Chronic pain can change a person's life. Lori reflects on how she navigated a significant life moment that changed her day-to-day routine.
I tore my ACL in a skiing accident, and some ways that I navigated through that, I had a lot of support from my loved ones. And then also kind of setting expectations for knowing how long it would take to recover, and then understanding how my body would be changing throughout that time and how my activities would be changing, how I would have to adjust how I do certain things with the injury and then following the surgery as well.
The pandemic affected everyone, but connecting virtually and finding new daily tasks gave Lori the outlet she needed to keep moving forward.
It was very unknown what was happening. This was kind of a new experience for really everyone. Having hobbies and distractions, things that we can do from far away, but also being able to connect with people virtually helped. Learning new things, new skills, cooking. I think just keeping yourself busy really helped, at least for the beginning times.
As the world slowly begins transitioning from virtual to in-person, I asked Lori, what's something you're looking forward to in the near future?
I'm actually getting married this June, so that's definitely something that I'm looking forward to.
Hi, I'm Patrick. Chronic pain can be caused by many things, but if you're like me and have severe hemophilia, chances are some of your pain might be the result of what's called hemophilic arthropathy, or HA for short. Tremo was founded with the goal of developing and delivering non-opioid pain therapies for people living with pain. Tremo's RESET-HA study is a clinical research study for people who experience joint pain due to hemophilia. The study's evaluating an oral, non-opioid, investigational drug designed to be taken once a day to see if it may potentially help relieve joint pain and improve physical function in people with hemophilic arthropathy. You may be eligible to participate in this clinical research study if you are between the ages of 12 and 75, have been diagnosed with hemophilia A or B, have chronic pain in one or more joints, and do not take opioid medication more than 4 days a week. If you are interested in learning more about taking part in Tremo's RESET-HA study, visit resethastudy.com. That's RESETHASTUDY.com to find a study location near you. Reset the way you manage your pain. Visit resethastudy.com today.
They may also not know about pelvic floor physical therapy.
Hi, and welcome back to the Pain Pod, where we're talking about...
don't say it!
Pelvic pain. As a culture, we generally don't speak of the pelvis or pelvic problems, even with our friends. If we have trouble, it's tough for people to talk about. But if we don't talk about it, how can we get help and keep moving forward? We've been discussing the stigma surrounding pelvic pain and the symptoms that a person might experience. Stephanie Prendergast explains why many people still don't know about pelvic floor physical therapy.
As I mentioned, gynecologists and urologists are not comfortable always talking about sex. And so some of our patients are finding us on their own, and they're really upset that they saw X number of doctors and they didn't explain this. But they have to do so many other things during the day. Pelvic floor examinations and training are not part of what they know how to do unless they sought out specific training to do so. And they have to even know that these problems exist, which many do not. So I see the conundrum that the providers and the patients are in.
So with many not knowing about pelvic floor physical therapy, education becomes a vital part of the job. Rachel Dayoff shares some general pelvic health education that you might hear when reaching out to a pelvic floor physical therapist for the first time.
A lot of what we do is just education and understanding how the pelvis works. So the pelvic floor is a very special group of muscles where you can voluntarily contract and relax and lengthen them, right? They're also special because it has autonomic function to it. So that means it constantly has to be on, just like our breathing. We don't necessarily think to breathe all the time or to regulate our blood pressure all the time. That's all autonomic function. So the pelvic floor muscles have some of that autonomic function to it because we need to have it run automatically so we are not leaking ourselves all the time or passing gas all the time when we don't want to. But the base of the autonomic function, too, another is fight or flight and rest and digest, parasympathetic and sympathetic. So that is autonomic function. If we are running in a sympathetic drive all the time, then that can cause a lot of us to tighten our pelvic floor muscles unconsciously and reflexively.
Learning how your pelvis works is key to understanding your pelvic floor PT's approaches. Rachel continues sharing some general areas of focus.
So lifestyle is huge. Like meditation is huge. Calming down the nervous system, learning how to breathe and relax is huge with that. And that's just the starting point. And then there's bladder health. There's how to take care of your bladder, like how much water you should be drinking a day, how many times you should be urinating a day, just things like that. There's a lot of lifestyle modifications that we can go over with our patients.
Stephanie shares what to expect when you begin your journey with a pelvic floor physical therapist.
We ask for the things that are concerning to them prior to them coming to the office. So we don't want to give a 17-page questionnaire for people to fill out, because I mean, that's really what we need, but we need to know what's the most bothersome from them. And then we work backwards from that. So we hear about the patient's most bothersome symptoms, and based on what they tell us, we decide how to do the evaluation, what structures need to be looked at, and that can involve manual palpation, movement assessment. It can vary depending on what the symptoms are. And then after the evaluation, we're usually able to link the most important things in their history to the physical findings, and then we come up with an assessment. This involves short-term and long-term goals. So typically, patients are in physical therapy for at least 3 months on the shorter end of things, depending on the severity of the situation. And short-term goals involve things such as normalizing pelvic floor motor control so the patient stops leaking urine. Longer term goals for the same type of scenario may be Mary can go through her day 8 hours at a time, urinating no more than 6 to 8 times in a 24-hour period and does not leak. So the short-term goals address the physical findings, and then the longer-term goals are what we're hoping to get to by the end of it. Basically, every 4 weeks, we reassess those things and adapt the treatment plan. There will be in-clinic treatment, that is things that patients can't do at home, and then we provide a home exercise program for the things that they can work on their own in between appointments.
And just like many pain programs today, pelvic floor physical therapy takes an interdisciplinary approach.
So I think we have a very unique position to fit into the interdisciplinary model because we have the most time with our patients. We are with them for at least an hour a week, one-on-one. And in that dynamic, we then can take information that may be necessary to go back to their different providers. If a medication needs to be adjusted, if we need a diagnostic test, if we need something, we have more time. And so I really enjoy that relationship with our patients because we kind of act like their CEO. So whatever we can do to make both the physician's life easier and that of our patients, we try to do that as much as we can. And we really value that because this is not just a physical therapy thing with the majority of the patients that I'm seeing.
If you'd like to learn more about pelvic pain or pelvic floor physical therapy, you can always visit the show notes of this episode for more resources. This episode may be ending.
Oh, I'm ready to talk about it.
But know that the conversation continues, and we're still going to talk about it. The more we talk, the more we can destigmatize and erase the common misconceptions surrounding pelvic pain so we can seek treatments that can help us move forward.
When you go to virtual reality, some people like to say we transport you from the world you are in today to a different world.
We talk about aging and emerging pain therapies next time on The Pain Pod. The Pain Pod is written and hosted by me, Mel Forrest, produced by Keith Korneluk, edited by Jose Miguel Baez, artwork by Ryan Gielen and Christina Newhard, post-production support from Joshua Sterling Bragg, Rob Bradford, Allison Stoney, and Avra Friedman, and executive produced by Patrick James Lynch. The Pain Pod is produced by Bloodstream Media and presented by Tremo Pharmaceuticals. Tremo's Reset HA study is a clinical research study for people who experience joint pain due to hemophilia. And you can learn more about it by visiting resethastudy.com. And as always, if you like this episode, make sure to subscribe, rate, and share The Pain Pod. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Mel Forrest, and we'll be back next time with episode 7 of The Pain Pod.